COVID-19 has changed the way we live and work almost overnight. Analysts are struggling to keep pace with the impact on economies and sectors and firms. And one thing that we already know, however, is that this crisis is accelerating an already growing trend towards digitalization. From virtual meetings to an accelerated push into e-commerce, online orders to drones in agriculture, digital services are growing in importance, permeating an increasing number of sectors and activities. Digitally agile firms are the ones adapting to the ongoing crisis more successfully, and others are rapidly skilling up in response to challenges to their business models. Now, for governments looking to drive economic recovery after this pandemic, supporting digital competitiveness is going to be the key. But as Eskom struggles to keep the lights on, Labour militates against potential job losses, and we still await the auction of high-frequency spectrum 5 years late, the question remains, how prepared are we as a country to embrace and leverage these technologies for growth? Well, let's introduce our panel. Brian Armstrong, Professor in the Chair of Digital Business at the Wits Business School, Rory Moore, Innovation Lead at Accenture in Africa, and Arthur Goldstuck, MD of Worldwide Works. Brian, in the latest ANC economic policy document, the Reconstruction, Growth, Transformation Building and a New Inclusive Economy paper, it was just released, it reckons that the pandemic has had a profound impact and implication for the world of work. And it was quite interesting to see the use of digitization or digital throughout the document. I think it was referenced some 17 times. And the use of technology has really taken center stage in all economic sectors at the moment. How exactly, from your vantage point, has the pandemic altered the way we are thinking about digital transformation in South Africa?
I mean, thanks, Michael. I think there's so many ways it has, but let me just sketch a few thoughts. I think up until the COVID virus arrived, there was a lot of people gave lip service to the fact transformation is a real change in the world and we need to transform. Some companies really appreciated it, others spoke about it. I think what COVID has proven is that disruptions come in many shapes and forms. COVID arrived, virtually every company had to reforecast, re-baseline their business plan, re-strategize, and actually really, in many cases, redesign their business completely. Now, obviously, the COVID disruption is a major one. I would argue that technological disruption over decades, the cumulative impact of all the technological change that we have to operate in, is as profound or more so than the COVID disruption. But because it happens slowly and on a progressive basis, we tend, you know, there's that old myth about the boiled frog, that if you put a frog into a cold pot of water and warm it up slowly, it doesn't jump out. I don't know that that's true, but the metaphor works well. And I think a lot of businesses have been essentially treating technological change as a slow thing, and oh, we'll get to it one day. But COVID shows that extraneous drivers of change are very real, and technology is one of those. And I think it's forced companies to confront the fact that the world is going to change. And we've seen it from retail through to travel and hospitality as losers and tech firms and so on, and deliveries and other sectors as potential. I don't like to use the word winners when relating to COVID, but certainly they're emerging stronger than before. So we're seeing that it is really impacting on things. But your point about government and the ANC referencing technological disruption and the digital economy as much as they do is really good that they're doing that. But please, let's convert that into action, guys. You know, the digital firms have this idea of minimum viable product. Let's get things into the market. Let's experiment and keep getting better with it. So let's stop talking about it and start doing it. During lockdown, I've been trying to get a driver's license. I know other people that have been trying to pay for learners. You still have to go into the center to do that. Government needs to digitalize its own services. If they're serious about driving a digital economy, the place to start is for government to digitalize their own services, their own operations, and their own practices.
Absolutely. For government to use that overused word, disrupt themselves. And Arthur, there's a very cynical view on the whole term Fourth Industrial Revolution in South Africa, because it seemed that the government really jumped full force onto that bandwagon over the last couple of years, and it was emblazoned in every speech. But then, to Brian's point, we still see this disconnect in the way that services are still paper-based, and there isn't much of that in action or implementation inside government. And then we've got the issues with Eskom and labor unions. What will it require for us to translate some of these potential benefits of the Fourth Industrial Revolution into real, tangible, meaningful action on the ground?
Firstly, Michael, exactly as you said, it was a bandwagon, and it was a bandwagon of lip service to the Fourth Industrial Revolution. At one of the major launch events or showcases of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, the example they used was Sophia the robot. That is really just a bit of mechanics with voice recognition and the equivalent of Siri or Google voice assistant built into it, which was as far from a disruption as you can get. But because that got all the headlines and the attention, that's what government jumped onto. And that symbolizes government's approach to the Fourth Industrial Revolution, that it's a nice term to bandy about, but very few in government actually know what it means. So we've researched the underlying technologies, the emerging technologies that make up the Fourth Industrial Revolution over the last 3 years. And one of the key things we found is that one of the big barriers to entry, to adoption, is the cost of these technologies. Not the cost of the tech itself, but the cost of the skills, and in particular, artificial intelligence, which you also hear bandied about a lot, with people not understanding fully what it represents. But it does represent a true revolution in the scale and scope of what you can do. But the skills on the ground are very scarce, and the emphasis on educating people in those skills is still lacking. So we need a massive government initiative from almost a grassroots level, starting in schools, but certainly at a tertiary level, promoting education and qualification in the emerging technologies that make up this revolution, and stop paying lip service to it and cheerleading the Fourth Industrial Revolution without providing the foundation that it requires.
And that is where it was encouraging. And I've got some of the bullet points from the ANC document here in front of me. For one of the bullet points to actually reference skill the youth in things like data processing and the blockchain and Internet of Things, but just computer education in general to ensure that we've got the human capacity to take these new technologies forward. Rory, at Accenture, what role are you playing in helping bridge the skills gap in South Africa when it comes to taking advantage, to Arthur's point, of the opportunities in these new technologies?
Well, look, that's a very good point, and I think that is probably the most pressing problem or challenge we need to solve as a nation, is to get the skills gap closed and to make sure that we are adequately preparing our people to play a vital role in this new economy. But maybe before answering that question, Michael, I think what this crisis has really exposed is a massive chasm between the companies that were well positioned to transform their companies digitally and the companies that were not, that were a bit slow and maybe being a bit conservative. So I think this crisis has really exposed that chasm between the companies that are well prepared and the companies that are not. What we are seeing, though, is almost bordering on hysterical hyperactivity, where a lot of companies are really now trying to catch up and digitize and transform their companies really quickly, which is exciting and daunting, but I think it's at least galvanized the community to recognize that we need to move in that direction. Just on the education, I think it's a tough one. Traditionally it takes 20 odd years to from someone being born to be able to be a productive member of society. And maybe a couple of generations ago that was fine, but we don't have that time. We've got to find ways to actually upskill and retool people far quicker than we have in the past. And Accenture is actively engaged with a number of business schools and learning institutions where we are partnering to make sure that there's a better match between the product of the institution graduating and their fit for work.
And I think, Brian, that's also one of your passion points, I know, at WITS, as chair of digital business at WITS. And the question I always ask myself is, are we, and I'm sure there's a lot of focus on coding and that kind of thing, but are we covering our broad base of skills here when it comes to training for skills for the fourth industrial revolution? Are we training for some of those more artisanal type skills that are also going to be necessary in this new world?
I mean, it's a huge topic, this, and it's something that the whole education sector has been grappling with, of course, in terms of how do we make sure that we transform and evolve and transform both what we teach and how we teach it. So in terms of what we teach, you know, there is a lot, this challenge that we haven't necessarily as a sector been producing people that are ready for the future world of work to the extent, and that means we do need to rethink what we teach. There's two or three points I'd like to say on that. The first is that whilst I'm all for people learning to code and making sure that we've got a big number of data scientists and the so-called emerging digital skills, we mustn't forget that for the foreseeable future, we'll still need doctors and lawyers and nurses and farmers and engineers and so on. So we can't completely throw in those inverted commas traditional skills out. What we need to do is teach people how to be better doctors and nurses and engineers and lawyers and accountants using digital techniques and practices in a modern digital way of doing it. So we need to make sure that we enhance and adapt those traditional skills for a digital world. Yes, we need to grow our data science and our AI and all those things. Mm. But the other point I'd like to make is all the research suggests that people that are capable of thriving in the digital economy are proficient. They have numeracy and literacy. They're proficient in basic mathematics and with languages. And that is where we have a real challenge in this country in our basic education. And that it's a huge political hot potato, but we cannot go into a digital era thinking that everything will be fine when 70% of our kids can't read for meaning and most of them can't do basic arithmetic. That's not going to be okay, so we need to fix that. In terms of how we teach, I think the COVID lockdown has been a wake-up call for all education institutions. We certainly moved our staff almost overnight from contact teaching to online teaching. We've proven that the learning outcomes are certainly no worse if you do these online courses properly. Even in complex subjects like strategy, we can show that you get good learning outcomes in virtual and online delivery. And what we need to do is find the right ways going forwards after lockdown, because human contact will still be very important. We are still social creatures. And how do we find the right blended modes of learning and engagement to take it forward? And I'm sure that's what all companies are dealing with, by the way, recognizing that digital channels are so much more important than anyone ever thought they were. But customers are still human beings, and there's still, for each industry, what is the right blend between digital channels, digital engagement, and the social engagement that comes from people talking to people.
Mm-hmm. Arthur, do you see that as some of the key challenges that companies are now going to have to negotiate and traverse? As we've said, everyone wants to now get online. You've been forced to get online because of physical distancing. But we've also realized that there is a certain human touch that we've lost in a Zoom conversation. We're getting Zoom fatigue and webinars. I think if I have to watch another webinar, let's not say what I'm going to do then. But there is a balance here that we need to strike. How do you see companies navigating this, and what are they going to have to focus on to get this balance right?
There's no question about it. I'd like to invite you to a webinar that I'm presenting after this session. But a big challenge is for companies to combine the technology solutions with human solutions. We actually saw a fantastic example in the last 24 hours of Twitter being hacked, not because their systems were hacked, but because their people were hacked. So they didn't protect their people or didn't prepare their people for the potential of breaches while they were investing heavily in protecting their systems. And that's really symbolic of what organizations have to do as well. They have to focus on both the effectiveness and satisfaction, and you could call it the user experience of their workers, as much as on how effective and efficient their systems are. Because if you have people that are working 10 hours a day instead of 8 hours a day because they're on call all the time and they're not stuck in traffic, and therefore they're working more intensively than ever before, and not traveling between meetings or walking between meetings, and therefore that time also being filled up, you suddenly have people who are getting massive work overload. And that's a common experience across the world, including in South Africa. People are finding themselves more exhausted working from home and not necessarily more productive, and it's not their fault. So, for example, one of the questions I was asked recently was, how can companies monitor their staff working from home to make sure they're working all the time? The answer is don't go there, because it's already hard for people working at this level of intensity. Now you want to police them as well and add that additional burden of stress. So the focus has to be on the employer experience and not just the customer experience.
Rory, when Accenture published its 2020 Tech Vision Report in February, it was really pre-pandemic. We had just seen the outbreak in Wuhan, and the world was really ill-equipped for what was about to happen and break on it. So I'm sure you've had to go back to the drawing board and have a look at those tech trends that you published in February. How has COVID changed that? What are some of the big trends now that you see shaping the world of tech?
So fascinating, yes, Michael, and I think it's often been said that a week is a long time in politics, but my goodness gracious me, it is a very long time in the technology world. And I think what we have seen is that in the weeks or months since we published that report, we've only seen the need increase and the validity of the trends be exposed, because we're seeing a far faster adoption and take up than we would normally have seen in any prior years where we released these trends. And we've been doing this for, I think, 25 years. What I can say is that I think this crisis really confirms that our future is an augmented future. You know, that reality is here. Calling it the fourth industrial revolution, or the new future, the new reality, the new world of work, that future is increasingly and more so going to be augmented by artificial intelligence, robots, and these new personalized experiences.
Brian, as business thinks of the opportunity here, how should business leaders be thinking about taking their organizations into a world where many people I say or speak to say, you should just think that we're going to have COVID for the next 2 years at least. Don't even think about vaccines or returning to any kind of normal. So for business leaders, how should they be thinking about employing new digital tools and technology at a time when most businesses are just struggling to keep the doors open?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, when it's not going to be a reopen after COVID, it's going to have to be a reinvent, which means the rules of the game are going to be different and have changed. Secondly, when embracing new technology, you know, in maybe previous eras, you had a long sort of onboarding period. Now, with how the technology has improved and the costs are coming down, you really need to get busy, which means start making. So stop thinking and start doing. Just start embracing the technologies and start using them. And I think that's what we're seeing the most successful firms do, is by actually doing something. So don't see the fourth industrial revolution as a robot on the side. See this as part of the core of your new business. You're going to be a digitally transformed business, and that the five tech trends or themes that we've identified really are invaluable as a guide for how to navigate this new normal.
Mm. Brian, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it is important to start doing and actually start experimenting and actually start doing lean innovation and making experiments about what your future can and should look like. I think the point I'd like to make, though, is people, when one thinks about digital transformation, there's really two important ways of thinking about it. The first is transforming how you do business, but it's also very much about transforming what business you do. Now, my experience with South African businesses is they're pretty good actually at transforming how they do business, about getting new IT, transforming business processes, putting in robotic process automation, digitalizing their channels, all that stuff. And that is absolutely necessary and must be done. But as the COVID virus has shown, disruption changes the shape of markets. Some markets grow and others shrink. The basis of competition changes. The location of profits in those markets shifts. And that means you have to reinvent what business you do as well as how you do business. And my sense is that is often at best an afterthought and isn't at the heart of the strategic conversation in firms about how actually is the demand for our product and service changing? How are the core supply factors in our industry changing? And how are we changing the way in which supply and demand comes together through us? Those are the really strategic questions that people need to be asking as we think about a disrupted digital future.
And I was thinking of restaurants as you were talking about that, because they've been so hugely disrupted by COVID. A lot of the margin is eroded in food delivery apps, and they can't sell alcohol at the moment. So their profit has completely shifted in that industry. So how do they now rethink and reimagine the way they do business? I want to come back, Arthur, to a point that was actually raised at the 4IR summit, I think last year, and it I think it was by George Friedman, who said, "No, we're a developing economy. We should really be focusing on low-skilled, menial, industrial-led growth. And there's really no space for South Africa to be playing in a kind of services-driven, high-tech, high growth type economic strategy." Do you go along with that? Do you think we're being over optimistic, considering the constraints that we've got with our human capacity to even consider going down some of these routes that the Fourth Industrial Revolution suggests we should?
I have a fundamental problem with that stance. I look back at a talk that Bill Gates gave a few years ago where he dispelled three fundamental myths of society. And one of those myths is that poor countries must stay poor. And that's almost what this statement consigns us to, is that we must remain a poor country. By insisting on sticking to almost the first industrial revolution, it almost guarantees that we won't play a role in the fourth industrial revolution. And I'll put that in the context of how the business models have changed. Further to what Brian was saying earlier, there was a cliche about 5 years ago that the world's largest taxi company, Uber, owns no vehicles. Facebook, the biggest media owner, creates no content. And Airbnb, the biggest accommodation provider, owns no real estate. And then that changed in the next few years to where Uber was buying cars, Facebook was commissioning content, and Airbnb was starting to buy real estate. That was 3 years later. 2020, suddenly, we're seeing a whole different model where Uber is laying off tens of thousands of people and delivering food. We see Facebook facing an advertising backlash and a boycott by some of the biggest companies in the world. We see Airbnb suddenly having no business. And all of those have to use the cliche, they have to pivot into new kinds of businesses. So that tells us that we have to be prepared for a future in which we can quickly shift our business models, our modes of operation, and also the kind of skills base we need. To have that kind of agile environment, you have to have digital skills, and you have to have people trained in an ability to address the world from a service point of view and not just from a manual labor perspective. So that tells us that we have to look at how South Africa can adapt given the limited means that it has.
And obviously I hope that we can keep the lights on for long enough to enable all of this technology to allow us to do all of those agile things and to adapt and innovate. But gents, thank you very much. I say that in jest. We certainly cannot be left behind in this global technological arms race. And as I've discussed with Brian Armstrong many times in the past, there will be global winners and losers, and we must do everything to ensure that South Africa is one of the global winners in this as well. well. That was Brian Armstrong, professor in the chair of digital business at the Wits Business School, Rory Moore, innovation lead at Accenture in Africa, and Arthur Goldstuck, MD of Worldwide Works.